A further impetus to revolt were rumors, and rural society was pervaded by rumors, of outrageous taxes which in fact did not really exist. Revolts might begin in the countryside with stories that new taxes were going to be imposed on shoes, or on clothes, or on hats, or on loaves of bread, or on jugs of water from the spring. And it needs to be seen that we need to understand the outrage that would come behind this. It's related to the outrage against the salt tax. The idea that someone would tax the basic articles, the basic necessities of life, would often drive the peasants into fury. Indeed, still more inflammatory were rumors, which often seem to have circulated in the mid-17th century French countryside, that the king was about to levy taxes on births, or on marriages, or even on deaths. In the town of Pau in 1657, a story circulated that peasants would now have to pay £30 for each newborn child. There seems to have been a variant of this story circulating at Aubenas in the year 1670, when the reported rates were £10 tax for a boy, but only £5 for a girl, who would be seen as less valuable, of course. These taxes on births were seen as particularly loathsome and evil. And indeed, on at least one occasion, there was a rumor that the authorities were about to impose a tax on sexual relations. We know that in the year 1697, the woman of Bayonne complained to the authorities of, quote, shameful levies on things which we cannot decently refer to on the freedom of marriage. And I think it's not hard to see how this would have been outrageous, at least if believed by any 17th century peasant. There is, however, one final crucial aspect of peasant revolt which really needs to be stressed, and it may seem paradoxical, but it is the role in peasant revolts of the aristocracy. Almost none of these peasant revolts can truly be described as spontaneous uprisings of the common people. There is, in fact, an awful lot of evidence to show that many peasant revolts, indeed perhaps most peasant revolts, were actually provoked by the nobility. And here again, I think it's worth underscoring the contrast with late 16th century peasant revolts, which were usually aimed at the nobility and on occasion, although not often, but certainly on occasion, took on overtones of class warfare. By the 17th century, the lines have shifted. Because the seigneur and the peasant had a mutual interest in resisting royal taxes, because taxation, after all, would restrict a peasant's ability to pay royal dues. I mean, the peasant only had so much income. You can think of it as a pie of some kind, and if the king took all of the pieces of the pie, there was rather less left for the seigneur to collect in rents. Therefore, most seigneurs were quite eager to protect their men against the royal tax collector. They intervened to have their tithes, this direct tax in money, levied on property in France, on real property, on land. They might intervene on behalf of their peasants to obtain dispensations for them from tolls, market tolls, or work details, or these kinds of things. Moreover, there were also fairly close communal ties between the nobility, the peasantry, and local officials during the early and mid-17th century. It is certainly true that there were many seigneurs who treated their peasants with cruelty and with rapacity, but a seigneur actually had to be pretty bad for his peasants to lose all feelings of loyalty towards him. The early modern period, as I've stressed in earlier lectures, was a period with deeply ingrained sense of deference to social superiors among the common people, and therefore a seigneur had an awful lot of social capital, if you want to think, among his peasants. And moreover, the seigneurs did not only support peasant uprisings, they often directly instigated them. That's fairly clear from the records which have survived. And in these instances, I think we have to say that peasant revolts are not far from being spontaneous uprisings of the common people. They are political disturbances in which the peasants are actually the willing instruments of the nobility themselves. Nobles did all kinds of things to make the crown go crazy. They organized opposition to taxes. They provoked armed uprisings. They supported rebels. They concealed them in their castles. I think it's worth noting that many magistrates were also seigneurs. Many court officials were also seigneurs. And in any case, the pressure brought upon office holders by the crown might often move them to organize resistance to the tax commissioners. The fury of the peasantry, it's worth stressing, I think, again, was clearly directed against royal taxation rather than seigneurial impositions. Peasants rarely attacked chateaux of the aristocrats. They instead went after the taxmen of the king. It is true that sometimes the peasants rejected seigneurial obligations as well as royal taxes, but the nobility themselves generally refused to march against the peasantry. The dirty work usually had to be done by the king's soldiers themselves. Thus, although I think we can say that the nobility did not create the resentment against taxes among the peasantry, they were very often the crucial catalyst in mobilizing this resentment into revolt. And this, it seems to me, explains the odd chronology of peasant revolt which I sketched out earlier. That is to say that there is so little rebellion among the common people in the last third of the 17th century at a time when their material sufferings are, if anything, higher than they had been before. And the explanation for that, I think, is fairly simple. The gradual co-optation of the nobility by the crown after the mid-17th century deprived the peasantry of crucial leadership, and it helps to explain their political quiescence at a time of very great suffering.